Thank you, Stain. That's true. It has been a while, and we're back. It's the winter solstice today, 21st of December, 2017. The Lumieres podcast has returned to your ear holes. And today, my guest for episode number 14 is a very good friend of mine. She's a singer, she's a choir leader and a music teacher, and her name is Sophia Efthimiu. I first met Sophia, when was it? Years ago, at what was then the Wild Heart Gathering. She was leading a singing workshop, and I popped along to participate in that. And it was the first time I'd ever done any kind of choir work or choral singing, and I found it really touching and moving. And we had a chat, and we just kept in touch on Facebook. And then a couple of years later, she ended up moving into the house that I was living in, the shared house in the foothills of the South Downs. And we just got to know each other and hung out as you do in shared houses and bonded over all the good stuff that we're into, spirituality and music and making silly jokes, cooking and being pretty OCD about cleanliness. And she became a dear friend, and I knew that she'd be perfect for the podcast. And back before it even started, I asked her if she wanted to be part of it and have a chat and we could record it. I knew it'd be really interesting. Listen, and for one reason or another, it never quite happened until a few weeks ago in November. And I was down visiting her and my old house, and we found the time, we did this conversation. It was brilliant, and I'm really happy to present it to you now on this day of light and sun and the closing of another cycle of the year and of the seasons, and marking the return of longer, warmer days to these wild northerly shores. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really appreciate you giving us your time, as ever. And if you did enjoy this podcast, which I hope you do, please, please tell people about it. That would be great. Please put it on your Facebook, share it on Instagram, or just tell people about it. You don't have to be on social media. Not at all. Please just, you know, give people a link, send it round, send an email, send a text. I don't know. Or do none of those things, really. It just helps me out a little bit, spreads the message. And I'm putting this out for the love and for you to learn something and maybe get inspired. Sophia is the sort of person who I was thinking about when I was putting this idea together. Somebody who's out there, you know, doing, just rocking it and doing what she does in her own unique way, and connecting, you know, making connections and helping people connect to themselves and each other and nature and, you know, something bigger than all of us. And that is just, that's great if you ask me. That's what we need more of in this world. So thank you very much, Sophia. I'm really happy that we made time to sit down and do this. And I hope you guys out there will enjoy it. I'm going to play you in with one of my favorite pieces of choral music, which a friend of mine, Ed, gave me years ago. I think he gave me a CD of this, and it just blew me away. I'd never heard anything quite like it. And this particular choir is known by the name Le Mystère de Voix Bulgares, which I think pretty much translates as the mystery of the Bulgarian voices. And it's pretty stunning stuff. It sounds so otherworldly and potent and full of energy. And I thought this might be a nice opportunity to pop this song in before we get into talking about singing and using the voice and choirs and what it means to sing together. Possibly this is the first podcast ever to include Stained alongside the mystery of the Bulgarian voices. I don't know. If so, I'm pretty pleased to hold that title. And if you want to connect with me, my social media name is Life in Fractals. So please, facebook.com/lifeinfractals, Instagram Life in Fractals. You can contact me via the lumierespodcast.com website. That's all for today. I hope you have a wonderful Yuletide, solstice-y, Christmassy holiday season, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And coming up next on this show, we've got a chat with a new friend of mine who I met up here in Pristine, near Pristine, I should say. But I'll leave it at that for now. So here we go. Le Mystère de Voix Bulgares. This is called Wedding Song. Thank you, everybody. See you next time. Okay. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, Jodie.
Nice to be with you, as always. I want to ask you, like, how come you're so busy at the moment? What is keeping you so busy?
Well, I run 5 choirs, and I seem to say yes to most things that people ask me to do in the world of singing because I love it so much.
So where are your 5 choirs? Like, where?
I have 3 weekly choirs that run on pretty much term time. 2 of them are in London, Hackney Harmony on a Tuesday night in Hackney and Camden Harmony on a Wednesday night, which is in Kentish Town. Then I come back home to Lewes and I have a zoo choir on a Thursday night, which is currently my biggest choir. Monthly, I run a choir called Shakti Sings. We meet in Staines and we sing songs to honour the earth and remember our connection to nature and to each other. And we dress in red and sing at all sorts of events, including Glastonbury Festival, which is quite a trip.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll probably get onto that in a bit.
And the last one, I've just restarted a choir at the Global Studies Department at Sussex University, and that's once every 2 weeks.
Does that feel like too much, or does that feel like just enough, or does that feel like, no, you could run more?
No, it feels the good amount. I'm at capacity.
You're at capacity.
Yeah, I'm at capacity because I just seem to have, my weekends just seem to be full up of other things that I do that are mostly things that support my career, as it were, as a singing leader. So weekends away and voice camp and retreats that either involve singing or movement that all kind of feed into what I do. So it's kind of my whole life is that, it feels like.
When did you start your first choir? Like, what? When are we talking now?
I started my first ongoing choir in 2010, yeah, in April.
First ongoing choir in 2010, wow. And is that Hackney Harmony?
That's Hackney Harmony, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And this is, just so people are aware, this isn't like School of Rock kind of pop song choirs.
No.
This is something a bit, trying to go somewhere a little bit deeper and maybe, I don't want to say, because a lot of singing is a lot of kind of, it's sort of devotional, I guess. A lot of the stuff that you do is quite from the heart and from, is sort of a sacred approach to voice and singing and song. Mm. And I guess that the closest sort of comparison would be to religious singing in churches and things like that. Or if you're going back to other cultures, tribal songs and things like that. So maybe you could talk a bit about your inspiration for that aspect that you bring to your choir, and why you don't do kind of, I guess maybe you do drop in the odd pop song, but
yeah.
why do you primarily focus on the sort of like more devotional aspect to you?
It's interesting. I don't know when the last time you've come to one of my workshops, but it's quite mixed these days. So we have the kind of sacred songs and tapping into more, yeah, kind of deeper space and connected space. But we also do a lot of really fun stuff. The pop song seems to be quite popular, but certainly not rock choir. I think with rock choir they might use backing tracks, but I'm all about a cappella. That's the main thing, I suppose, is that I run a cappella choir. So it's just voices, no instrumental accompaniment, apart from the odd djembe or cajon in performances. It can be really good to have a djembe on, like, the African songs.
Mm-hmm.
And my style of what I do is changing over time. Like, the more connected I'm becoming with myself and with nature and dropping into a more intimate space with myself, the more I can hold that space in groups and offer songs that feel more ceremonial and sacred. And that really come from the truth, you know. We have really special times. At Zoo Choir last night, we were singing a song called Find the Cost of Freedom. And it's a Crosby, Stills and Nash song, but it's actually a different arrangement by a Czech woman, whose name I forget now, which is very unprofessional. But we were singing that, and I got people to lie down in the middle of the floor just on their backs and just receive the sound. And at one point there were like 8 or 9 people just all just lying down in different positions but very close while we all sang. And and I think it was quite a deep state that people went into. So I try in all my sessions, I try and do a mixture of stuff. So we'll have some really upbeat, silly stuff.
So I guess a lot of the, even a lot of the stuff that's about kind of, shall we say, spiritual or earth-based or devotional, if you want to give it a kind of broad blanket term. Mm. A lot of that stuff can be really celebratory and can be really happy and fun. And like a lot of that African style stuff is just, it puts a smile on your face, even if you're singing like, you know, really potent, about really potent subjects.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, one of the songs that we're doing, the main African song that we're doing this term is called Baba Tandaza. And it's, and it means things are the way they are because of prayer, because of prayer, because of prayer. Our grandmothers and mothers of old used to pray, used to pray, used to pray. So, and because it's been Day of the Dead week this week, and I've just been singing songs about that aspect of life, the other side, you know. And so we were singing that song for our ancestors. So we had a whole session last night that was, every song we sung was for our ancestors or for loved ones. And that one was just totally banging, like everyone was just dancing and so celebratory.
It's so great that there's an out, like you've created an outlet for that. I mean, do you get the impression that people are looking for that, a way to express themselves in that way?
Yeah.
You know, there's not that much, especially group-based ways to tap into that, you know? Like, you're offering quite a unique space there for people to...
Yeah, it's come about quite organically, just through being inspired by other people and the way that they hold space. And like I said, just it's just a reflection of where I'm at.
Yeah.
And what I'm interested in and where I'm wanting to go in myself. And that's where I'm inviting people to go with me. I think people don't really realise what they're coming for. Sometimes they think, oh, this, you know, people have been talking about this choir and it sounds great and let's go and it sounds really fun. And then they come and have this really, really profound experience. And people come up to me at the end and they're like, oh my God, I had no idea that it was going to feel like this. And there's always someone who ends up crying. I feel like a failure if someone doesn't cry in one of my sessions.
That's quite amazing, isn't it? Like, how does that feel for you to be the sort of holder and generator of the space where people can let go into those experiences? I mean, that's a real special role to take.
I just feel really grateful for it. I don't want this to sound funny, but it's really easy for me. It's not an effort. I really enjoy it so much. It feels really natural.
Anyone who's kind of seen or been part of your scene will no doubt agree, I reckon.
So I just feel totally blessed to have discovered this, you know, really deep love for singing and harmony and people and, you know, this kind of quite high functioning racy brain, which sometimes makes life quite high anxiety and lots of adrenaline, but it also manages to hold a lot of songs and harmony parts in my head all at once. So that mixed with having really good taste in music, I think. I really love all the repertoire that I bring and can be quite fussy with it. And as any choir leader is, I'm sure. So, yeah, I just feel blessed. I can't believe it sometimes that I get to... I feel like I've got this human loop station in front of me. And sometimes when we do improvised pieces or circle singing, which is something inspired by Bobby McFerrin, where I'll make up a little riff and for one group and kind of layer it up just spontaneously. And then I'm standing in the middle listening to this incredible, you know, soundscape, or whether it's a song I've taught, and I just think, wow, is this my life? And then people pay me at the end, you know, and I'm like, Wow.
In a way, you get, you're in the best position to hear it all, yeah, as well.
But we do quite often, in every session, we sing at least one song in a circle and hold a space.
I like that. And I like what you said about, yeah, and people can, is that like a voluntary thing? People just come in and on an invitation?
Yeah,
and
if you come in the middle, you're not singing, you're just receiving the sound. And that can be quite powerful for people.
Because that sounds like quite a unique thing. Is that something that choirs do? Because that's, I mean, normally when you see, I guess my experience of it is fairly limited, but what most people imagine to be choirs, it's sort of like you're the choir and then the choir leader's at the front. Yeah. And is that sort of like...
Well, that's in a kind of performance dynamic, which is how we perform when we do gigs. But the real magic for me is in standing in a circle.
Okay.
In any kind of community musician and community music situation, the circle is just a really sacred shape because it's an equalizer. Mm-hmm. And I'll try where I can to just stand back and be within the circle once I've taught a song, so that I'm not always in the middle. But yeah, like I said, the circle's the equalizer and no one's at the edge, you know. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the inspiration has come from singing at various camps and festivals, and over the last 4 or 5 years, Voice Camp, Unicorn Voice Camp, has been a real like amalgamation of everything that I love about singing in community and singing for each other. When you sing in a circle, everyone in the choir gets to hear everyone. They're not just offering their voice to me and the audience, they're kind of bouncing it back.
I remember that's what you did at WOMAD Festival, one of your workshops.
Yeah,
you started off, and I think we did the whole thing in the choir, in
a circle. If I can, we will. It's only when I need lyrics, but nearly everything I do, I try to do without. Where possible, we try to do without lyrics. Obviously, when we're doing pop songs, I have my projector and the lyrics are on the wall. But a lot of stuff I try and get people to just learn by rote, and I think sometimes people feel quite nervous about that and they want a piece of paper with the lyrics. And obviously people who read music would rather have a score, but the whole way that I teach is that it's completely accessible and that anyone can do it. And I personally feel that when we learn something by ear and not using our visual sense, because I feel like that's quite overused and overrated in a way, is to actually use our ears and our bodies and hear it, feel the vibration and integrate it in an embodied way and in an oral way, and through our listening. And then it's there, it stays there, and you're not relying on looking at it.
And it's not it's less of a mental process, I guess. It's more of a full body kind of approach. Wow. How do you deal with, so I imagine you get people with all kinds of vocal ability.
Yeah.
Coming, like, how does that, how do you, as the person who is charged with sort of tying those little, all those people into something bigger than themselves, than just the individual, how does that work? Like, because I can't quite imagine how you do that.
I think a lot of the time people are really surprised at how easy it is for them to sing, even when they have an idea that they can't. So a lot of people I hear say, oh, I'm tone deaf, and it's not true. Tone deafness, which is an actual thing called amusia, is really, really affects a very tiny fraction of people. And that would mean that you can't actually recognise a tune.
That's funny, because that's something that people say quite a lot.
Yeah, and it's not true. So it might be true that you... you find it really difficult to pitch match. So if someone sings something, you find it difficult to hear it and give the same resonance back, the same vibration back. But it's just like anything that takes practice. And I say this in my TEDx talk, that someone once said to me, you know, it's funny because when a kid's learning to ride a bike, if they fall off the first time, which we all did, they're not told, oh, you can't ride a bike. They're told to get back on the bike and keep practicing until they can ride the bike.
Mm-hmm.
But if a child opens their mouth to sing and makes a sound that isn't pleasing, or their voice cracks a bit, or it's not quite in tune because they haven't been exposed to music or anything, whatever reason, they can very often be told, you can't sing. And that story stays with them for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's really, really sad and upsetting. And And then I have a lot of people who come to my choir and say, this is the first time I've sung since I was 7 years old, or I was 13 and my music teacher told me to mime. Or, and then you realise that you can. And my sessions, and lots of sessions run by natural voice practitioners, but teach in a very embodied and very simple way. So we do quite a long physical warm-up just to get the body relaxed, get our instrument ready to make sound.
And that's the kind of bit that you do at the start that it kind of sort of breaks the ice as well.
Yeah.
Like everyone sort of drops their daily shit and just has a giggle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have a lot of fun doing that. And I must say that Sue Hart is one of my biggest inspirations when it comes to warm-ups, because she's just hilarious. And it's really nice, really freeing for me to just make any, you know, ridiculous sounds and get people to just explore their voice and stretch their voice, because we all have this very specific way of using our voice. I'm still learning about mine. And it's kind of really linked to our identity and our psychology and our conditioning and the way that we interact with the world. Just the tone of our voice, not even what we say. I mean, that's a whole other thing, but just actually the resonance of our voice and where we speak from in our body. Mm. So I can feel myself relaxing more now. My voice gets lower when I'm relaxed.
Yeah.
A lot of the time I'm kind of in quite an adrenalized place and I'm kind of talking and I really want people to hear what I've got to say, and I'm kind of talking from my throat. So yeah, we in the warm-up, it's just getting into this relaxed body state, and we always start with something really easy, and it just gets people used to call and response. It's like people find it easier than they think, basically, and that's how it can kind of work in a community setting with different abilities. Sometimes there are people that struggle, and I just get them to stand right in the middle of their part and really listen. I really encourage people to listen. At least half of making music is listening. So if they can really tune into what's happening around them, then they can usually find their way. You know, I've never asked anyone to leave. It's not
okay.
It's not a can sing, can't sing situation.
Right. And in terms of the sort of the positioning within the choir as a unit, is it the case that everyone has like a natural place in that, or is that adjustable or flexible, or can it be changed, or does that depend on how they, you know, how they personally can access their singing voice?
When we're preparing for gigs, it kind of does make sense where possible for people to stay in one part. Some people become very attached to, and their identity is tied up with singing a certain part, like I am a soprano or I am a tenor.
Right. That's what I'm getting at, I guess.
Yeah, and for the men, obviously bass is a kind of natural place, but there's a lot of men that actually could sing tenor, which is just a high male voice.
Mm.
I try to teach quite a few songs where it could be mixed voices on all the parts as well. So really encourage people to just sing whichever part feels good, and it might be different to what you did last week, and maybe this week you feel like exploring a high part in your voice, and maybe you're a soprano and you want to know what it's like to sing tenor and sing in that really low resonant space. So I get people to move around and just be less identified with a certain type of voice, basically.
So you've been teaching choirs for, where are we, that must be 7 years
ongoing choir,
as a regular practice. So this is pretty much, you're pretty much living your gift, I guess, would you say? Do you feel like this is like, because it seems to me, because it's so natural to see you in that role, and the way that you hold a space and the way that you function within it, as you just described the way you kind of knit it all together, it seems like you're in real natural, in your element, really. So how old were you when you first did that, when the first one, if you don't mind me asking?
Years and I'm 33, so 20.
So that's quite, six. I mean, it feels like where did it come from, that vision to do that and to start that? Because it feels like you've had such a clarity with doing this, and it feels like you've always had that.
Yeah, since I've known you. I guess it must have started for me in church. So I went to a kind of Pentecostal, was it, or evangelical? I can't remember, a church.
That's a Christian subset.
Yeah, in West London, or Baptist.
Baptist.
And it was a lot of African and Caribbean people in the church, and very gospel vibe, very celebratory. I mean, I was really, really into it.
Wow.
And really...
At what age? Like a teenager?
when I was a teenager, I kind of went off of church a bit and haven't ended up kind of going back in the same way since. But I remember being like 8, 9, 10 years old and feeling God, you know, just really feeling God through the music.
That's a real formative age to be having those experiences as well. Yeah,
yeah, it was amazing. And then I've got a name, Mr. Catlow, my music teacher when I was at school. We used to do GCSE music and do a lot of this Kodai, Solfa, Do, Re, Mi stuff, but lots of harmonies. He basically really inspired me with harmonies. So, yeah, he was pretty formative. And then it was going to camps. So there's the old dance camps, Dance Camp East, I went to, and I went to a big... That was the first time I was in a big marquee with a load of really kind of alternative folk, I suppose you call them. And someone taught a song, and I remember the song, and I don't remember what it means or where it's from. It was some sounds. Every now and again I teach it, but I remember just feeling completely overwhelmed. It was the first time I'd felt, probably since I was at church. So I was about 15, 16 at this point.
Right.
And I was just completely enraptured and in love and crying, and with this marquee with 200 people singing this three-part harmony, very simple song. But it was the harmonies. It's always been the harmonies that have got me since I was really young. And then the real kind of clincher was sometime, it must have been around 2005, 2006, I went to Sunrise Festival, and I went to a workshop with a woman called Chandra Mathers, who again is a member of the Natural Voice Network. And she taught a bunch of songs, and I had a great time. It's just how I teach workshops now, in the Natural Voice style. And at the end of the workshop, I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to get into festivals for free. That's what it was. That was my inspiration. I was like, I could get into festivals for free doing that, because I remember all those harmony parts, and I could do this. I can.
Were you part of a choir when you were that? Did you join a choir at all?
No.
You've never been in a choir. That's funny.
Hold on. No, I did. Yeah, I did. I was in a choir all through school.
Ah, okay.
So secondary school, I was in a choir up to that age, around 15, kind of GCSE times. This is so weird. I can't believe that I've not been in an ongoing choir in my adult years. No, because it started from running workshops. Because, like I said, my inspiration was get into festivals for free doing this. The next summer, I ran my first workshop at dance camp.
You just started. You were ready to start, so you started.
I just started. So I did a couple of summers of just running workshops at festivals, at Secret Garden and various festivals. And then, my boyfriend at the time was really encouraging me, like, you should just start a choir, an ongoing choir. Just do it. And then I booked Hackney City Farm, and it's just all grown from there.
That's amazing, isn't it? I love that.
Yeah.
How did you find the transition from sort of the workshops to a regular, like having your own sort of thing that you can grow and do what you want with, rather than just the randomness of
it's totally different. I mean, it's totally different. You're just cultivating an ongoing relationship with this group of people, even though my choirs can be quite transient of people coming and going. There are generally like a solid nucleus of people that have been coming for at least a couple of years, and in some cases several years. It's just totally different. Like, it's a different workload. The pressure's on in a way, because you have to kind of plan what you're doing each week, and you have to kind of be thinking ahead. Whereas a one-off workshop at a festival, I can almost just do off the cuff, and just I'll have a plan and I'll have songs, but I nearly always go off and do a different one depending on the vibe in the room and who's there and how it feels.
And I guess that can come with experience, I would guess.
Yeah, that's much easier now. Like I've kind of come full circle. Right at the beginning I was like planning a lot, and then I had this few years in the middle where I was like, God, I can get away without doing any planning. I can just turn up and now I've come back to like, actually it's quite nice to get.
But it's all good planning, and I mean not planning. It's all good training. Like that training to be able to improvise, that's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing that you can do that if you, for some reason, like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I could do a singing workshop right now. Like, it would be great. There's only two of us, so it might be a bit limited.
I'm not sure what my harmonies would be like.
It'd be great.
So on the festival kind of thing, you talked earlier, you said about the Glastonbury thing with Shakti Sings.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a different It's a different kind of kettle of fish from your normal stuff. So maybe you can talk a bit about that experience and how that was for you, that whole festival.
It was really full on. That was probably one of the most full on weeks of my life in terms of kind of energy output. It was really, really fantastic. So my dear friend Susie Prater has been running that choir for 4 years. Me and Sue Hart actually assisted on the first year of its running. So that was 5 years ago now. And then Susie's been running it pretty much on her own since then. And she decided to move on and focus on her album and things and asked me to do it. So I've been running it for the last year. And it's great. They're a really great bunch of people. It's quite a thing taking over a choir from someone else.
I imagine.
Because they can be quite attached to their leader, which is completely natural, and have kind of set ways of doing things, and it can be an adaptation process.
Mm.
But out of all the choirs that I've taken over, Shakti's definitely been the easiest transition. That's probably to do with how ridiculously similar me and Susie are. So they're kind of, there are differences, but I think hopefully it's been quite smooth for everyone. And yeah, Shakti is the kind of, Glastonbury is the culmination of the Shakti Sings year. And yeah, it's a full-on schedule for us. We're singing from, we have these 12 till 3 shifts every 12 hours, so up at the Stones. And the mission basically is to get people's attention on a specific level. We're trying to get people to pick up their rubbish and not leave specifically at the Stones and NOS canisters lying around.
So hang on, you're doing 3-hour sessions every 12 hours?
We end up, we leave at 12, and the time we get up there, we sing. We tend to sing for about half an hour and then split off and talk to people and try and engage people.
Okay. So that's,
and then we join
like
together and sing for another.
You're in that focused space.
And we end up getting people to join in and singing with us. So it's kind of ended up being just a kind of joyful excuse to sing together in harmony and get people joining in. And people know us now. They know like the Red Choir at Glastonbury.
Yeah. And how many people are in that choir?
The numbers fluctuate quite a bit. We had 40 tickets for Glastonbury this year, but we can have up to 80 people at the sessions.
Wow.
And they're once a month in Staines, and everyone's welcome, by the way.
So people come from all over the country for that?
Yeah. That was part of the reason it was in Staines, was because when Susie ran it, she was in Bristol. So it was a lot of people coming from the west. So it's on the west side of London, right on the M25 almost. So, yeah, and people come from all over. I mean, I come from Sussex to get up there.
Wow, that's amazing. But that's an intense schedule then, you know, doing that at a festival, which I imagine, I've never been, but I imagine is fairly intense just to be there anyway.
I couldn't do it, actually. I had to have some cover. Aaron was my just complete right-hand man. He sings in Shakti, and he's recently started running choirs, and he's brilliant. He's such a shining star. And he held a couple of sessions for me when I was just about to collapse. We were also doing gigs in the daytime as well. Most days we'd have one gig on a stage somewhere on site. So, yeah, it was a real...
With an alternating repertoire every time, or kind of walking in sort of similar...
We've got a big repertoire range from a whole year's worth, and then we just pick whatever songs is, oh, we've done that one every time, let's do this one now. Oh, I remember that one, you know. There's been a lot of repertoire building up over the years with Susie, a lot of it I know, and then all the songs that I've brought, so... And we do a real mix as well. The pop songs are really good at Glastonbury for getting people's attention.
Yeah.
And then we hit them with the hardcore kind of Helen Yeoman's Earth Connection songs. It's good.
And what were the responses like from people that are just kind of watching or hanging out around?
Just amazing. They're just incredible. Such moving moments. I mean, we sang for one woman who was scattering the ashes of a loved one, and we sang a couple of songs for her. She was really moved.
Wow.
Yeah, and because it's a sacred site there up at the Stones, this is the whole kind of mission that we're on, is kind of turning it back into a sacred space, because it just became the kind of drug trade point of the site and just crazy mayhem up there.
Mm.
And we come up there and just kind of offering and encouraging something a bit different and bringing it back to singing these sacred songs in the Stone Circle.
Mm.
And we also do Shakti Singhs go to the Stonehenge on the solstices as well.
Yeah. I've seen the photos.
Yeah.
Wow, I bet that's kind of I bet that's something, quite something.
Yeah, that's epic. I mean, that's crazy. That's a moment of just like, is this my life? How did I get this gig where we're at the Stones and there's hundreds of people there and, you know, thousands flocking in, and suddenly the Druids all just part ways and I walk into the centre of the Stones and stand on this rock with my choir behind me and they surround me, and now I'm like leading singing with, you know, hundreds if not thousands, I don't know how many people are there with a yeah, and it's incredible. It feels really, really beautiful, and I feel blessed, totally blessed.
That's such a great image. I love that, of the Druids stepping aside, yeah, like parting the crowd, like, yeah, let Sophia through.
Yeah,
she's got work to do. Everyone's got work to do. Yeah. So where so at the moment you're running five choirs, you're doing festivals every now and again.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're pretty busy. Where does it, I mean, do you have like a 5-year plan for your choirs, or how does it evolve? Do you just do it organically?
Yeah, I'm not very forward thinking. I mean, it could be a really good idea. There is choir leaders I know who have got a bit more of a long term game plan with stuff like that, but I just, for me, it's enough. I have the venue hired, people turn up, people love it, we sing, it's really powerful and really healing. We go home, we come back next week.
Mm-hmm.
We do performances and gigs. I'd like to do a few more flash mobs. We did some flash mobs with Hackney Harmony a few years ago, and singing. Zoo Choir have gone and sang at this elderly people's home in near Lewis. The name's gone out of my head now. Lime Tree House, which is really, really sweet.
That's such a nice idea.
Yeah, to give back to the community. I mean, that's really moving. I don't think anyone's done that gig without crying before, because they're just really receptive. And
wow, that's amazing. I love the idea of that. There's so much potential in that of creating that experience for people who've maybe never had the opportunity to be in front of a choir like that. Yeah, oh, I love that. There should be more of that.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few of choirs doing that. There's quite a few choirs that do that.
Mm.
And there's also the threshold singing, which is the singing for the dying, which I've got quite a few colleagues that were involved in, and is certainly something that I'd like to get involved in. The singing for transitions, you know, and for ceremony and for ritual, and it'd be so healing to have a voice accompany you through that particular transition and through pain, just through pain. We all experience loss and pain and grief and joy and beginnings and endings, and for me the singing's just an opportunity to acknowledge and celebrate and sing ourselves through all of that. I mean, John Bowker, I've got to mention him because he's a huge inspiration for me as well, and I'll just get tongue-tied if I try and talk too much about him, but he holds a space at Voice Camp called Heart Song, which is a very, very special and sacred space where we sing these relatively simple, short, but harmonically exquisite pieces that he's written, often in some African dialects or some very powerful English words. And there's a space in the middle that people come into to just release emotion and be however they want to be. Like how we do in choir, and how it often ends up in my choirs, is that someone will become quite moved in that space. But it's set up specifically almost like a grief tending circle, I suppose. Because singing the harmonies, like certain harmonies for me and for people, and it is often the same harmonies, you know, in songs, same moments in songs, can really crack people's hearts open.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it was for me. That's how I started all of this, because I was just crying my eyes out with this, hearing these harmonies, and just like, wow.
And that seems like a really important part of all this, is the therapeutic aspect of it, you know.
Yeah, it's really healing. I mean, it's it's known now anyway. There's so many scientific studies and articles out there that talk about the oxytocin and endorphins that singing together releases. And if you acquire sing together, if a group of humans sing together for 20 minutes or more, their heart rate starts to synchronize. So we're literally experiencing unity. And for me, that's what it's about. That's the crux of it for me, is that it feels like the sickness of humanity is about separation.
Yeah.
And we all know that, and there's lots of ways for us to come together and feel that unity again, countless ways. And this is one way, and this is my favourite way, is to sing in a group of people, because we become part of something. We create a whole, and I think it reminds people, we have a very embodied experience and a remembering of what unity and what oneness really is and can really feel like. And that's what's really moving. I feel really moved speaking about that now. So I think that's, without knowing it or not, I think that's what people are coming back for. Mm. And that's certainly why I'm in it.
Mm. Beautifully put. Mm. And also the, I guess, the aspect of just coming together to sing. There's a lot of initial shyness, and it's something that people aren't used to doing, but it's a way of reconnecting to the old ways, as it were, when we would gather together in groups and sing at certain times and mark, you know, the seasons, the turn of the sun and moon and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so important that these kind of things are reawoken, you know, and what you're doing is a really amazing part of that. Do you anything around the sort of equinox? You mentioned the solstice, the seasonal kind of.
Yeah,
how do you represent the seasons through the choir? Or do you feel like when you're, it's a winter kind of, when it's winter time and you're singing in the choir, how does that feel compared to like springtime in the choir? And do you change the songs because of that sort of?
Yeah, definitely. I'd probably say that the winter term, the term that we're in now, is probably my favourite term. It feels really necessary to kind of come together, huddle together at this time of year and just ourselves. Mm. Yeah, create warmth together and sing ourselves through into the kind of darkness of the year. And I acknowledge the seasons and the turning of the earth a lot in the workshops and choirs that I lead, because I love that. So lots of wassails. We do some traditional carols, but we also do some nice old carols. Kirsty Martin down in Brighton's collected these forgotten carols and runs these forgotten carols workshops, and other folk friends and colleagues of mine, Ali Burns, Sally Davies, have really inspired me to get into singing these old kind of pre-church carols, and pagan, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, in the sort of the old songs of these lands, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have those songs.
We used to be called the Singing Isle, I think. The Singing People, the Singing Isle, England, like all these isles.
Really?
Yeah. So it's an old tradition that's in our memory, you know, it's in our ancestry. Mm. We've just become quite removed from it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm all about reclaiming that, all about that. I'd like to research more songs from these lands. I get quite enticed away with the African stuff and the gospel and
some of the American folk music.
Yeah, and it's great. But we do, increasingly, we do more and more folk from these lands. And yeah, we're doing a wassail, the Silver Apple song by Sarah Morgan, Craig Morgan Robson, who are a folk trio. And and then songs about new beginnings when we come into the spring, and do Walking on Sunshine in the summer by Katrina and the Waves, you know, like we totally sing about where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That's really nice. It's just another way for people to kind of connect to that cycle, those cycles.
Yeah.
And how it works within themselves as well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you come to do a TEDx talk? What was the story behind that?
Yeah, I just met a woman on the beach in Thailand. She was a bit of an answer to... That's how it starts.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. It was a bit of an answer to a prayer, actually. I really needed a sister. I was out there on my own. Fiona Buckland, who's become a beautiful friend. And I led a little singing workshop out on Koh Phangan in Thailand. And she came to one of them. I did two, I think. And when I got back to England, she contacted me a few months later and said that she was kind of helping to find the speakers for this all-women's TEDx event in Shoreditch in East London. And she contacted me and asked me if I would do it. And I remember kind of reading the message and kind of looking over my shoulder going, me? You want me to do a TEDx talk? What do you mean? And Carl, my partner, he was there in the background going, say yes, say yes, say yes. And I was like, okay, yes. And that was, it was quite an intense kind of 4 or 5 weeks, I think, leading up to that. Yes, on YouTube, it's called Singing Ourselves Home.
Singing Ourselves Home.
So if you Google TEDx, Singing Ourselves Home, and I wrote a song, which at that point was in two-part harmony, called This Is Home. And I've since written in four-part harmony. And because of that talk, and I guess because it's on the internet and then crosses the oceans, I've been getting emails from people in Canada and Australia and America asking me for that song and if they can do it with their choirs. So that little song has kind of spread out
so beautiful
across the waves, which feels beautiful.
Yeah, and it must be great for you to feel, to be able to share that, which you love, and talk about why you love it and why you feel it's so powerful with an audience that can, like you say, cross country boundaries. And did you just say that was a song you composed yourself? Is that something how much of that have you done, and is that something that you want to do more of?
I definitely want to do more of that. I guess the only thing that I'd say about how busy I am and having five choirs and the energy that takes and the admin it takes to keep that going. And just energetically, the energy output from holding space from large groups, it doesn't leave me a lot of time and space in my life to be doing my own music. And, it's interesting. It's like I feel emotional talking about it as I remember that we teach what we most need to learn, And I've got my own blocks around this word musician, and it's really interesting to reflect on that. It feels quite vulnerable to say it out loud in a podcast.
I've always had it with the word artist. Artist is something that somebody else, other people are, that sort of like artists are successful people who are up here sort of, and they're artists, but I can't be, and it's such a weird thing, isn't it?
Well, it's crazy actually, because I know and preach that we're all musicians and we're all artists, and on a deeper level I know that, but it's the strength of the psychology of the mind and the conditioning that comes and tells me, no, you're not a proper musician. You don't actually play any instrument like really well and all of this. And it's like,
like I said,
we teach what we need to learn. Like, because I've got that going on, I feel like that makes me connect more in a group with people.
Okay.
Because I actually really do believe that we're all musicians and it's innate. Music's innate for all of us. We've been making music since the beginning of time, I'm sure. There are studies school of thought out there that we were singing before we were speaking, we're certainly drumming before we were speaking, and communicating through rhythm. So I say certainly as if I know I wasn't there, but I'm choosing to be in accordance with that. And so it's just a remembering. And again, like I said, I think that's why it's so emotional for people, because it's in us, it's in our ancestry, it's in our bodies, it's in our bones. So when we do it, something deep in us is stirred, and that's why it's so emotional for people.
Yeah, and it puts people in a vulnerable place, I guess, expressing those kind of the way that deep emotions and feelings and thoughts and all that can come out. It's I don't know, it takes like a certain bravery and courage, I think, to get to those places, especially if it's just you on your own. I've been in lots of bands, and when you're in a band, it's like you're in a gang. So you kind of take on that vulnerability as a shared sort of thing. And it's the same in a choir. I don't know, when you do performances, that's a very big gang.
It's a big gang,
You're a kind of crew, and it's really solid. And as an individual, especially you know, I think that must be quite a barrier to work through.
Yeah, I'd love to do some more collaborating. I mean, I've been singing kind of backing vocals and instrumental support with Carrie Tree for the last few years, and she's been one of my favourite artists and singers since I was like 20 and I first moved to Brighton and heard her song Complete Faith. She had me, and now I live with her just for the way that life has unravelled. And so yeah, singing with her has been an amazing journey, just to even just get used to being on stage and facing the audience, because I've done countless performances but I've got my back to the audience. Yeah. So it's a great way to be on stage and feel all that energy without, you know, it's the choir that are looking at everyone.
Yeah.
So when I first clocked that, I found that quite interesting, that that was my kind of comfort zone. So yeah, through singing with Carrie, getting used to using a mic and playing instruments, and, you know, and also being involved in this really, really special sacred music. To me, the songs she writes to me are just heaven sent.
Yeah, she's great.
Divinely channeled, just songs. It's just incredible, and she's an amazing musician and friend and sister now. But yeah, I'd love to do more collaborating. Should we make a band?
Well, now that I'm moving to Wales, it's going to be difficult. I'd love to make a band. Yeah, yeah. That's one of my things that I'm going to try and do
while you're there. Yeah,
yeah. So that process of singing with Carrie, and you've been opening and playing yourself, right, on the Imbira. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, yeah, I'm still doing that. I mean, that's been a real game changer for me, was meeting Denise Rowe, who does, she does all sorts. Yeah, she's a magician. Leads embodied movement and work, connecting with the landscape, working out on the landscape, kind of inspired by deep ecology, and also with ceremony and ritual, African dance and ceremony and ritual and song and drumming. She runs an amazing camp called Foot to Earth Camp, which is every September on Dartmoor. You've got to come next year, Jodie, and everyone who's listening to this, although it can't be that big, so some of you. And yeah, the work that I've been doing with her for the last 3 years, I've been doing a retreat with her called The Bridge, which I now assist the music on. So through the work that I've done with her, I've started playing the Imbira, which is a Zimbabwean instrument, which looks like lots of spoon handles on a block of wood.
Yeah, and you play commonly it with your thumbs. I guess people might know it as a thumb piano.
Yeah, and it's called a kalimba in other parts of Africa. So the songs that I learn are these traditional Shona Zimbabwean songs, and I meet with a group of Imbira players in Brighton. Yeah, that instrument's become a very important meditative practice for me, and I just love it. And it's a very special instrument because it's kind of purpose and function in the village in Zimbabwe, which I actually visited with Dee a few years ago, is to call in the ancestors and to call in the spirits and to connect with our ancestors.
Is that the purpose of all Imbiras, or is that just a Zimbabwean thing? Like,
I'm sure it is in other parts of Africa as well, I'm sure, but I can only speak for where I went,
right,
which was, this village in Zimbabwe. And so there's a certain kind of a sacredness when I play it and kind of get into this zone, and it's really gorgeous, actually. I don't know how it would come through the mic. Maybe I'll save that one for in person. But so I've woven that a little bit into my choirs as well.
Oh, really?
So we sing these sacred Shona song a couple of times. We've done that.
I just want to go back to your experience in Zimbabwe, because I mean, I take it you were visiting or staying with people who were singing and singing their songs with you.
Yeah.
So how was that? Because they've got an unbroken lineage of song, right, in their setting.
Yeah. Well, they've kept it very much alive in this particular village. I don't know the kind of detailed history of it, but we were on a dance retreat, a dance and movement. Embodied movement and African dance and drumming kind of retreat, Heart of the Dance, it's called. So it's the, I think it was the first one that I went on that Dee's done, and she's done another one since. So we were staying just outside the village, and then we'd go into the village for ceremonies, all night Mbira ceremonies in the spirit house in the centre of the village. So the spirit medium is kind of central figure in the village, and the spirit house is like the kind of home of the spirits, and the home in the village that everyone kind of comes together when any decisions need to be made, or if there's any upset or conflict that needs to, or there's a celebration or someone joined the family or a child's mm-hmm. being born or anything, people meet and have these ceremonies. And so there were two when we were there. They did one, I think, for us, just to acknowledge the that we were there from faraway lands had come to visit them. And another one was for all the men. I can't remember the detail of it. It was all the men on one side of one family. And, very, very powerful. Singing and playing Mbira all night, even the grandmothers. And they kind of snuggle up and sleep in the corners, and their children are all there, and then people will just get up again at 4 a.m. and join in again, and people, so the music goes all the way through till sunrise. So that's the idea, is that we're playing and singing and dancing for the spirits all night long, and it kind of gives you something to sing for, you know.
Yeah, that's so amazing. That's so great. Obviously that must have inspired you massively, just to kind of be part of that sort of tradition.
Yeah.
Is that something that do you think there's a place for things like that over here, you know?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, so Denise's husband, Kennedy, they do hold Mbira ceremonies, they're called Biras, at various events that Dee holds on Dartmoor, so including Foot to Earth Camp. So on the Saturday night at Foot to Earth Camp, there is a Bira, the all-night ceremony, and... Yeah, I think last time they were there, they asked the spirits, through the spirit medium, how that would be to start to bring the ceremonies over and to integrate, and is that okay? And actually, it was really well received and felt a really, really positive thing. So there's kind of a danger or a concern maybe about diluting them
or appropriating it.
Even in my speaking about it, I'm actually wanting to make sure that I'm honouring that tradition as much as I can. And it's impossible to do it with words as well, because it's kind of a wordless realm. It's the integrity with the way that Dee has brought that tradition to England is immaculate. And
yeah, but and I mean that's one way, but I'm talking, I guess I'm kind of saying it doesn't have to be from that tradition to do an all-night ceremony like that with singing and music. You know, there could be an evolutionary sort of English-British version
That. I mean, I'm so interested to kind of know more about that. I guess I'm really interested in what our ancestors, forefathers, and used to do, and obviously women. And there's a lot of culture, ritual, and ceremony coming over to England from other parts of the world.
You know,
my housemate's recently gone and done the Danza de la Luna, the moon dance, in Mexico, and we've got a Mexican shrine up on the other side of that curtain in our living room. To honour Day of the Dead. And so there's a lot of integrating different cultures. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting you ask that question, because it's like I haven't really even thought kind of loads about that. The ceremonies that I kind of partake in are kind of generally seem to be from other lands. So I'm really interested in where and how we can connect back to that. That isn't just creating them ourselves or mimicking others.
Sure.
So, and I think creating them ourselves.
I mean, there's elements of ceremony and ritual and things that are common across all cultures.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
We'll just kind of use them in the way that we'd use them.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's room for something connected to this land to come through in that sense. I like the idea of
definitely.
And maybe it draws from maybe there's a, you know, you sing a Zimbabwean song because it's that's part of what's drawn you to it. But it doesn't have to be this like purist we only do things if it's grown here, that kind of thing.
Everybody's
inspired by things from all over the place, right? But just something about that kind of sounds. There's a gap for that.
I'm finding my way with it. I think singing for ritual and ceremony is part of what I offer in my groups, and it would be great to do to run some events that were just for that, and also to just initiate some events in the community that are, I think they're happening. Basically, yeah, it's really interesting. It's definitely something. I'm finding my way with that at the moment, and it's definitely something that I feel is going
to
come.
Yeah, it just feels like a sort of a natural progression to go from holding space in that sense to doing it on a more dedicated or with a different intent slightly.
Well, it feels like that at the solstice.
And
actually, I think when we've done the kind of African songs there, sometimes it has felt slightly jarring. It's been like we could be singing more songs from these lands, and that's what I'm wanting to gently bring in my focus towards with my choirs, is doing more traditional folk songs from these isles, from the Wise Isles. I want to tell you about the Natural Voice Network, because this is a network of singing leaders that have been really inspiring for me in my practice, because we all agree to teach in a very inclusive way and in a very embodied way. So if you're looking for a choir that isn't pop choir, rock choir or a church choir, then do look up naturalvoice.net.
Is this a British thing or an international thing?
It's British. It's founded and mainly British. There are some European and international, perhaps there's people even from America who are part of it, but it's certainly mostly England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and Unicorn Voice Camp as well, which happens in August every summer, is a big hit of singing. If you like harmony singing, that's like you're dosed up for the year. It's amazing.
So, I mean, with these things going on, it almost sounds like that is a breeding ground for the reemergence of these kind of practices and singing and ritual and ceremony. And there's a lot going on this island.
Yeah, well, they're all happening. It's funny when you say that, actually, because it makes me remember all the things that I do, that we do, like at Into the Wild, when we do the opening ceremonies and closing ceremonies and I'm leading the singing with everyone, or we've sung, you know, I've done singing for people's weddings, singing for people's funerals, taught songs to people that are grieving.
It's so beautiful, it's so great.
For baby blessings. So it's all happening, actually.
Maybe you're going to become a singing celebrant.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder if there's like some kind of official process that I have to go through. That it feels like that kind of sacredness and that just dropping into a deeper space with it all, and just feels really like it comes from just really feeling it and knowing it myself in my body. And the more I feel it and know it in my body, like, the more I feel okay to talk about it. And it's not, you know, to talk about it and be inspired by it through my work. And I was going to say, it's not something that's kind of exclusive to one person and not to other people. We're all finding our way back to remembering, you know, our part in the connectedness of everything. And it's just, I guess someone's got to stand up and rant about it sometimes. And hopefully those people might listen.
Yeah.
But no, it's been really great to talk to you, Jodie. Thank you for all your brilliant questions.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm really glad that we've managed to finally get it all in with our weird scheduling.
And on my rest day. I've made room for you on my rest day.
I'm bowing. Thanks, Sophia.
Thank you.
I guess, like, yeah, so you want to... People should definitely go and watch your TEDx, which we spoke about earlier.
Yeah, it's on the homepage on my website, which is just singing ourselves home.
Your website is singingourselveshome.com.
Yeah.
And is there any other videos and things of your, you know, the Glastonbury stuff and things where people can just get a flavour of what you do? Is that on YouTube as well?
Yeah, there's bits and bobs. I mean, you can, for the Shakti Sings choir, you can Google on YouTube Shakti Sings and some stuff should come up. I mean, Carl, my partner, who's just infinitely supportive with me and what I do, he films nearly every gig and every choir performance that we do. And we've got reams and reams of footage that we need to go through.
Sounds like a documentary in the making, yeah.
So there are videos on my website, and they might not be the most up-to-date, but there are definitely some up there. So, yeah, have a look.
And if you live in London or Brighton or Lewis, not Brighton, well, yeah, Brighton.
Yeah, people come up from Brighton.
Or Sussex,
People come from Tunbridge Wells to come to Zoo Choir.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's amazing.
You can find that all on the choirs tab on the website. So, yeah, you're all welcome to join in the new year. So we're kind of at that point in the term now where we're in. If you're in, you're in. And we're gearing up towards some really exciting gigs. But yeah, most of this stuff's on the website, Facebook, all that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Please go check it out. Sophia is awesome, as you can tell. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jodie.
We found our way. La, la, la.